Hello, readers. My name is Jason Jefferies, and this is Bookin', brought to you by our new presenting sponsor, the North Carolina Book Festival, one of North Carolina's many amazing premier literary events. Happy to host North Carolina's many amazing authors, along with national and international bestsellers, prize winners, independent authors, and debut authors. My guest today is Georgianne Eubanks. She is a writer, documentary filmmaker, and consultant to nonprofits. She's the author of 5 books from the University of North Carolina Press, the most recent of which is Saving the Wild South, The Fight for Native Plants on the Brink of Extinction. Today we are discussing Song Keepers, a Music Maker Foundation anthology, which is co-published by our friends at No Depression and the Music Maker Foundation. Georgianne, thank you so much for joining me.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Jason.
It is an honor to have you here. And Georgianne, I want to dive into Song Keeper in a little while, but this is your first time on Bookin'. So first, I would like to ask you a few questions about you. First, what does your work as a consultant for nonprofits entail?
Well, I started out as a communications consultant, doing a lot of writing for colleges and universities, working with arts organizations in strategic planning and succession planning. Most of my arts work was in North Carolina, and my education work was all over the country. I say was because I'm not doing as much of that now. Yeah. I have turned to writing pretty much full time for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm still involved with a few nonprofits on boards and that sort of thing, but and I'll still take a commission piece of writing like Song Keepers because it fascinated me, that opportunity to work with the Music Maker Foundation on this book.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that answer. You have received a Mid-South Emmy for songwriting. What was the song or body of work that you received the nomination for, and are you still writing songs?
Well, that's interesting. In the late 90s, Donna Campbell, who is a video producer, and I teamed up to create a business called Minnow Media. Mm-hmm. And we started doing documentary work for public television. And one of the shows that we were asked to create was called Something in Common. Mm-hmm. And it was to document the changes in the demographics across North Carolina and how the shifting demographics, in particular, people moving into North Carolina from other places, was affecting our public schools. So, you know, public schools were suddenly confronted with students that spoke 20, you know, there were 27 different languages in a single school. And how was the school going to deal with that? And of course, old racial tensions, the controversy around busing and neighborhood schools and charter schools and private schools, all those things were sort of alive then at the end of the 90s. And we ended up doing this piece by visiting a whole lot of schools to find out how they were coping with the diversity of students. And we needed a song. And I have been a musician all my life. I started out playing piano as a real little kid and then moved to the flute and then moved to the chorus and then taught myself guitar and performed a good bit when I was still in college. So I picked up the guitar and I wrote the song and got a very good friend who's a much better singer than I am to record it and a great pianist to sort of really give the melody some chops. And we submitted it to the Emmys. And I have to say, we got the Emmy. Our competition was only one other song, and it was about NASCAR. So I don't know if I can claim great fame as a songwriter because of that, but it was sure exciting and a lot of fun. And of course, when they do the Emmys in Nashville for the Mid-South region, it's just as fancy as, you know, Hollywood.
That sounds great. Hey, people take NASCAR very seriously around.
I know they do.
Yeah, I think that you can definitely claim that. That's fascinating. You know, I guess it would have been in the late 80s, early 90s. I was in public school in North Carolina and then moved right across the border to Rock Hill, South Carolina. Huh. to go to schools there. Unfortunately, the schools are not good in South Carolina. But this sounds like a topic that could be updated for the 2020s. You know, as a father of a second grader who moved from North Carolina public schools to Colorado private schools and is now back in North Carolina public schools, that's definitely a topic that interests me. And I think things have probably changed a little bit in the last 30 years.
Yeah, it has. And of course, COVID was another big game changer. So there are lots of documentaries about public education that could be done. Unfortunately, the documentary process is very expensive. It takes time to do it well. And as Donna and I have learned, if a documentary is any good, it's never over. You're always still, hopefully circulating that film or hearing from people. So it's been a great run. I'd say we've done, I don't know, a dozen or more shows of full length, and now we're trying to downsize a bit. And frankly, doing books is a lot easier than doing a video documentary. So that's.
For sure. Thank you, Georgianne. What is Solatido? How did it start and how does it work?
Okay, well, that is a workshop retreat for singer-songwriters in the South. And I'll give you the short answer. We had an opportunity to create this week-long workshop at Wild Acres Retreat, which is in the North Carolina mountains. It's a beautiful retreat center. It sits at 3,500 feet, has an incredible view of Mount Mitchell. And I wanted to get a foot in the door at the retreat center with the hope of maybe growing a program there for writers and songwriters. So Latido, we joke, is not much emphasis on the dough. It's a barely break-even enterprise, but it brings together a community of songwriters. It's fairly small. We tend to draw the same people every year. This is our 20th year. We
Nice.
started out by inviting a singer-songwriter of some note to come and spend a day with the group and then perform that evening. And so we had some great people. We had Carrie Newcomer, we had Marshall Chapman, we had Stacey Earle and her husband, we had Kate Campbell, and we had a great time, but it became clear that our group didn't need an instructor. They just needed some prompts. And so we gather every morning of the workshop. First thing, I give them a prompt. They go away, they come back 2.5 hours later, and most of them have a song that's pretty close to being finished. By the end of the week, we give a concert of the songs they've written that week, and it's pretty phenomenal. We have a couple of musicians who join to actually do some additional instrumentation and to make the performance sound fuller. And we have recorded CDs every year too, at first during the concert and now later after the workshop, so that people have a record of the work they did that week. And now Solatido meets in conjunction with the Table Rock Writers Workshop, which is a much larger gathering, and we fill the entire retreat center with writers, and the songwriters are just one small group among several.
That sounds fantastic. If you ever need a drummer out there, let me know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for sure. I will have a couple more questions about your other work later, Georgianne, but now let's talk about Song Keepers, this wonderful anthology box set and book about the Music Maker Foundation and the work they've done over the last 30 years. Georgianne, could you take a moment to tell us who is the Music Maker Foundation and how did you hook up with them?
Well, Tim and Denise Duffy came to North Carolina in 1987, and I was here, and I remember hearing about them eventually when they moved to Hillsboro. They were originally in Winston-Salem, where they met up with a whole community of unheralded, uncelebrated, but remarkably talented blues musicians who were performing in local venues, on porches, in drink houses, not so much performing for the public, but for each other and celebrating life in the best way they could. Tim had gone to, or was going to, finish a degree in folklore from UNC, Denise was working in the apparel industry, and they decided they wanted to create a nonprofit organization to support these musicians and to preserve their music, because a lot of these guys were pretty old and in poor health. I mean, they weren't all guys. There were women. It was an amazing community in Winston-Salem. And they would in turn introduce Tim and Denise to other musicians they knew. And pretty soon they had a significant cohort of folks they took on tour, performing the blues across the country with sponsorship from Reynolds Tobacco. This was back, you know, of course, in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And by 1994, they'd established an independent record label to record these musicians. And they discovered that if they could just raise enough money, they could help some of these folks with their expenses, living expenses, with personal disasters or health challenges, with grants. And so they actually became a foundation. And over these 30 years, they've given over 15,000 grants to musicians to help them get their car repaired, get dentures, put a new roof on their house. Some mm-hmm. musicians get a small stipend every month just to help them with food and shelter. They raise about $1 million a year now. They're taking these artists and have taken these artists from across the South to perform in venues as diverse as Carnegie Hall, to music houses in Paris, to festivals like the one in Colorado, help me, Telluride.
Telluride, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's an amazing organization, and they even have a social worker on staff to help the musicians navigate the complexity of, you know, healthcare and everything else that we have to deal with in retirement. So with building community and building a community of donors, they manage to support these musicians, mostly raising from individuals at $1 million a year. Only about 5% of their revenue is from grants. So they've kept it kind of streamlined, and it's an amazing story. Every single musician, and there are 80 some musicians in this book, every single one has a fabulous story. So I was completely engaged with the idea of helping them to tell their 30-year history.
Absolutely. Thank you. And it is a wonderful book. I've not been able to stop listening to the music that is in this book. There are 4 CDs that come with it. And it's also streaming on services such as Apple Music and Spotify. I haven't been able to stop listening to it since Tim and Denise gave me a copy. It is set up so that disc 1 is acoustic blues, disc 2 is electric blues, disc 3 is gospel, and disc 4 is various genres. Georgianne, do you have a favorite artist that you wrote about, or someone whose story particularly resonated with you?
Oh gosh, there's so many. Mm-hmm. I would say that when we started down this road, I didn't realize I was going to write liner notes mm-hmm. for the songs. Mm-hmm. There, you know, across 4 CDs, there are a lot of songs.
Yeah, 80.
And that took sitting downstairs in my living room with the stereo playing these tunes. And Tim was kind enough to let me sort of have a say in how we ordered them. Some tunes that we cut and some we left. And he told me most of the stories of these musicians, but I did also have a chance to meet some. Mm-hmm. And I really, really loved Big Ron Hunter, who lives yes. in Winston-Salem. Mm-hmm. He grew up in a log cabin in the woods outside of Winston-Salem in rural Hall. And he was raised by his grandparents because his mother had him at a young age, and she decided she needed to support him. But to support him, she had to leave North Carolina and go to New York. So it was sort of a tragic situation for him. But he was coming along there just as North Carolina was integrating the schools. And Big Ron is African-American. He ended up as the only Black kid in Reynolds High School in Winston. And this was in the Flower Child era. Mm-hmm. So Ron was a talented guitar player. He was very much influenced by white people folk music, which was all the rage then.
Right.
And he joined a band, and he was the only Black kid in the band. But he was something of a hero in his school, and I think that gave him it gave him a lot of joy. The music has always given him a lot of joy. In fact, he has this tagline is the happiest blues singer in America. He lost a lot of friends in the Vietnam War. He did sing some blues about that. But he's managed to blend soul and pop together in a way that makes his music sound familiar to me as a, kid who grew up in that era in Atlanta. And at the same time, he brings the tradition of his own culture to bear on the music. And going to visit him and his wife in their house, a house that Music Maker helped them get very quickly when they were booted out of a rental property by their landlord. And he was so excited about having a great big backyard that he was going to have to cut a lot of grass, but he was able to make it into a music venue. So really, really enjoyed Big Ron, and he was one of the few Music Maker musicians we had a chance to spend time with.
That's fantastic. I wrote a catching up with Big Ron Hunter profile last week or the week before. Such a nice, generous man. As you mentioned, the happiest blues man in America. The thing that really surprised me about listening to his music is that he's not using these traditional blues chord progressions. He's, as you mentioned, he grew up in kind of the flower power era of Vietnam War, etc. And his chords are maybe like, no, I'm not talking about lead guitar here. I'm talking about chords, but like the intersection of like a Jimi Hendrix and like Bob Weir, maybe. It's just, yeah, it's a lot more rock and roll than I expected on acoustic. But yeah, I really enjoyed his music. I'm glad that you brought him up.
And speaking of Jimi Hendrix, if I can, we had a chance to go to Atlanta. Donna Campbell and I were traveling doing research for Saving the Wild South, actually. And so we, or maybe it was the next book, actually. That's another story. But anyway, we got a chance to go to Atlanta and visit with Herman Hitson, who accompanied Jimi Hendrix as he traveled and played, and they were good friends. They met each other as running buddies. They would jog, and so Herman is a very, very successful wah-wah guitar player, and there's controversy in the music world about who learned from whom in that relationship. Jimmy's no longer with us. And as Herman said, if I had made as much money as he did, I wouldn't be alive either. It's a good thing I never got famous.
Good
But
perspective.
he's in his 80s. He's still playing. He's still very, very, he's got his chops. He's great.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Georgianne. Listeners, we're going to take a brief break here for a word from Libro FM Audiobooks, and then I will be right back with Georgianne Eubanks.
The Bookin' Podcast is sponsored by Libro FM Audiobooks. Libro FM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore, Quail Ridge Books. You can pick from more than 100,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With Libro.fm, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know the name. But you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community. Listeners of Bookin' can get a 3-month audiobook membership for the price of one. Go to Libro.fm, that's Libro.fm, and enter Bookin', Bookin, in the promo code space. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores.
I'm back with Georgianne Eubanks, author of Song Keepers, a Music Maker Foundation anthology, which is co-published by our friends at No Depression and the Music Maker Foundation. Georgianne, there were a few other contributors to this book, including Tim Duffy, one of Music Maker Foundation's founders, who you spoke about earlier, found the MMF with his wife, Denise. What has it been like working with Tim and Denise on this anthology, learning about their history, learning how they work together as a married couple?
Well, they are a really dynamic duo. Tim is extremely creative, and he says what he thinks. He's blunt. He's funny. He's mercurial in a way, as a lot of very creative people are. He was anxious about this book. It's of course he would be. It's 30 years of their work and effort to do right by these musicians and wanting to tell their story and to tell it appropriately. Tim is the dreamer. Tim is the guy that goes out and plays, almost always plays with musicians that he gets to know. He loves music so much, and that's really his drive. He's also kind of a maverick folklorist in that there has been a trend, I suppose, in folklore from the very beginning of taking, of extracting music from musicians and putting them in the libraries, in the vaults, in the archives, and leaving them locked up there. Tim is very much interested in making sure, and Denise as well, that this music is appreciated and understood for what it represents in terms of talent and the sort of stories that have gone untold about life for people who were oppressed in our society. And he is an incredible photographer. He's mastered the skills of tintype photography, which is amazing. So his pictures have a very interesting character, and they're quite glorious to look at in the book. And he selected his very best, not so much to illustrate the book faithfully, but to give his very best photos. That was kind of the editing principle for that. Denise is a businesswoman. She's fiercely pragmatic. She keeps Tim from going off the deep end with his creativity and wanting to do so many things. She's a great fundraiser, and I think she gives people a lot of confidence that their donations will be stewarded well. And she is unapologetically compassionate and puts the musicians first. So it's a great combination for the business, and then they have been able to bring folks in to do the work, the day-to-day work. As I mentioned, they have a social worker on staff, and a lot of young people have come through Music Maker Foundation, learning not only about the music and the lives of the musicians, but also how to run a nonprofit. So that's a pretty great combination.
Yeah, I'd say thank you so much, Georgianne. And as you mentioned, Tim's photography is wonderful. That is one of the bonuses of this book and box set, is all of the wonderful photographs included within. Georgianne, when working on this book, how did you find the artist relationships to be with Tim and Denise, the founders of Music Maker Foundation?
Well, the artists are very grateful. Individuals are individuals, and not every single relationship that this foundation has tried to establish with folks has worked as well as others. That's the nature of humans. But the folks we met were wonderfully generous, thankful, grateful, hopeful. Even those who have suffered a lot of illness or infirmity, they're still committed to their musical careers and are trying to perform every time they can. Some of the musicians on the younger side are still on the move, trying to make a career, and they've had challenges along the way, which is why Music Maker has stepped in to support them. But this is like sometimes it's a dream come true to get to go in a music studio and record your songs for the first time, and to have very, very able and capable people engineering that music and helping you sound the best you can. Having been through myself the creation of a number of CDs for Sol Latido, and also sometimes with songs that we've produced for our videos, I know what that thrill is like, and I know what that process is like. And it's very gratifying to see these folks who may be living on the margins, but are able to go into a studio and get a first-rate treatment of their material.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. And I am excited, Georgian, to announce on this podcast for the first time that I'm starting as the new programming guru at the Music Maker Foundation on Monday. Today, if you're listening to this podcast as it comes out, April 1st, this is not an April Fool's joke. Longtime listeners know that I am a musician and a music nerd, and I'm very much looking forward to this opportunity to help further the mission of the Music Maker Foundation. I had the opportunity to meet with Freeman Bynes a few weeks ago and play some of his guitars. And I'll soon be doing some work with Martha Spencer on her new album, Out in La La Land, which is a fantastic album. I can't wait for everybody to hear it.
Congratulations, Jason. You're going to be great. You're going to be a wonderful asset for the organization. And I know it's going to be a good ride for you.
Thank you so much, Georgia. And I'm super excited to start working with Tim and Denise and everyone at Music Maker Foundation. Georgian, for those of our listeners who are just now learning about the Music Maker Foundation for the first time, what would you tell them to entice them to give some of Music Maker Foundation's artists a listen, or maybe even contribute to the foundation's cause?
Well, I have I've given away a good number of books to friends. I've also sold a good number of books to folks who wanted to give them as gifts. It's a wonderful gift because of the CDs. Some people may or may not want to read the story of Music Maker first. They might just want to listen to the music. And the thing about the music is that, and I didn't mention this before in talking about Tim, he is a remarkable engineer. And what he has done with the music that is on this record, for the most part, almost all of the cuts are very simple. Musician, instrument, voice. And the clarity and crispness of the recordings is extremely satisfying. I get kind of sick of overproduced music, you know, just lathered on with all these layers of stuff. These are very basic sounds, like you might experience if you had been in the church or in the drink house or on the porch with these guys. And the instruments have their own stories. You mentioned Freeman Bynes in Greenville. What a remarkable man. He's a mystic. He's a seer. He's a philosopher. And he is the maker of guitars out of wood that is old and has a story in its own. So you're not going to find this kind of music anywhere else. You're not going to find this volume of stories of musicians that have some characteristics in common, even across the genres of blues, gospel, folk, and eclectic other. So this is a unique product, and I think people who love music just have to give it a listen, because it's fundamental to who we are in this country as Americans. Denise likes to talk about how we don't really have a religion. Our common ethnicity or religion in the United States, but this music in its diversity illustrates our identity as Americans, which is very complicated. And it's a piece of our collective culture that is not so easy to find.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Georgian. To bring us full circle back to some of your other work now, can you tell us about your most recent work for UNC Press, Saving the Wild South?
Sure. I'll back up just to say quickly, the first three books I did were commissions from the North Carolina Arts Council. Nice. I traveled, Donna and I traveled the state of North Carolina, identifying places that our state's writers or visiting famous writers have written about in the state as a way to create tours that people can take of spots while they're reading literature from North Carolina. It was a great project. It took 10 years and two different vehicles, and then we took a break. And then we sort of missed getting back out on the road, and so we decided we would eat our way across North Carolina. And we created a book called The Month of Their Ripening, and it's 12 chapters, one per month, about a special food or a food that is special to North Carolina that's part of our identity and character as a state. So, for example, we have soft shell crab, which everybody looks forward to in May. We have scuppernongs, which are, you know, a defining fruit in the eastern part of the state. We have ramps, which the Cherokee people have been eating this time of year for 3,000 years. So those are some of the stories that we got to tell. In the process of doing that work, I learned about how some of these foods are in danger, how some of these crops are being diminished, overfishing, all the kind of environmental issues that we face now in the production of our indigenous food, as it were. So I got interested in endangered plants and decided that I would use that same sort of 12-chapter format to discover a dozen plants across not just North Carolina, but six states of the South that are endangered, and to learn why they're endangered, who's trying to protect them, what are the things we can do, what are we losing from our identity as Southerners by the loss of these plants. And what I ended up with was, you know, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a botanist, I couldn't even play one on TV, but I did learn a lot about the people who are making a difference now across the South in protecting these species, these native plants that are so important, not just in their own self, but as part of an ecosystem. And we love our environment in North Carolina from the mountains to the coast. So I think it's important to know what we are potentially losing. So that's what that book is about. And now I have finished a book and turned it in, and it'll be out next year, called The Fabulous Ordinary. And it is a collection of chapters. Each chapter is an essay about something that happens, something ordinary that happens every year across seven states of the South in one of those places that you really should go see and take your kids and grandchildren to see. So, for example, we went to Alabama to the Wheeler Wildlife National Wildlife Refuge and saw 25,000 sandhill cranes feeding in the field. And that was a beautiful thing to see. They come through in January every year in this part of Alabama, but among them were a couple of whooping cranes. And there are only about 600 whooping cranes left in this flyway. So that was like, wow. I remembered being a kid reading my weekly reader in elementary school about how whooping cranes were going extinct. And there were 30 whooping cranes left in America back then. So that now we've got a few more, and we've saved their DNA. And so they're not completely in peril. Each chapter is a story like that. And we go to Virginia and Alabama and Florida and Georgia and South Carolina and North Carolina, Tennessee. And it was great fun. And it was very moving to see these things. And kids should see this while they can.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds fantastic. That sounds like all the states I just drove through across the country. Right. Well, you have spoken about North Carolina in the books that you have written across North Carolina. So I ran the last North Carolina Literary Festival that was owned by Duke, UNC, and NC State, as it was formerly a venture that was started by the Center for the Study of the American South at UNC, and then was supposed to bounce around every 2 years between universities. That never quite worked out for, amongst other reasons. Duke uses private funding, the other two are public, et cetera, boring stuff like that. But then I took the book festival over from the universities with their blessings and sponsorship in an attempt to celebrate North Carolina authors. This is something that will likely be coming back in a different form in 2025. We'll have more details about that in a few weeks, in combination with another one of the great North Carolina book festivals that we have several across our state. What I tell people as I've moved in and out of North Carolina for most of my life, when I managed a bookstore in San Francisco and I managed a bookstore in Colorado, I tell people that North Carolina to me is, as the North Carolina Writers Network says, the writing estate. We have more fantastic authors here than anywhere I can think of, maybe outside of, you know, New York or Los Angeles. What do you think it is about North Carolina that inspires so many writers to call this area their home? And what does it mean to you to be an artist and creator in the state of North Carolina?
Gosh, throw me a softball, Jason. this is something I've thought about a lot and have written about a lot. And I, for me, from my experience coming here from Georgia as a freshman at Duke, and deciding to stay in North Carolina because the towns are smaller for the most part, or were back then, because the beach and the mountains were so close by. The biodiversity is remarkable. But I think there have been, fortunately, a constellation of writers in the 20th century. I can't say much before that, but in the 20th century, a constellation of writers who adopted a very generous mode of being and collegiality. They became teachers of the next generation and the next generation and the next generation, passing along, with some notable exceptions, passing along the idea that writing is a worthy discipline. It's a gift you give to yourself first and to others possibly, and to encourage the voices of these teachers encourage the voices of all kind of folks. And that sort of DNA exists through our programs in creative writing, and there is a we experience the same proliferation of MFA programs as other places, but we already had an awful lot going on. Also, there's a lot to write about in North Carolina. We are a very diverse state in terms of, I just recently read something that we have the most dialects and accents of any state. This is Walt Wolfram's work out of NC State. So there's a lot to write about. There's a lot in tension, which is what you need for a good story, as something has to happen, something has to change. We are a progressive state among our neighbors, I'd say. And so you need that edge to have a good story. And the South is not hurting for storytellers. We seem to manufacture them pretty instantly. But I do think I would give the credit to people like Fred Chappell and Doris Betts, who have been so generous and set a standard that the writers who have followed them continue to uphold. And Daniel Wallace moved here from Alabama. Jill McCorkle was one of the first writers I ever wrote a profile piece of when her first two novels came out, and she was. She's about 10 years younger than I am, but wow, what a story. And think about the people who have nurtured her along her career. So, and she's given it back as fast as she can. And that next generation of young writers are coming along. Jill is actually going to teach for us at Table Rock Writers Workshop this summer. She's got time, and I might say that class is full. It was full on the second day we announced it. But anyway, she's giving back in a most extraordinary way. And frankly, when you get to be as successful as some writers, the need to give back or the need to teach perhaps is not as profound, but these folks are doing it. And I think of Randall Keenan. There's so many names we could name of generous teachers that have kept it going. That's the basic answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And listeners, most of these folks that Georgianne has just mentioned have been on past episodes of this podcast. Randall was on right before he passed away. May he rest in peace. Daniel was on last week's episode for the paperback release of his true crime memoir. And Jill has been on many times. She's been a wonderful teacher, mentor, and friend to me. And I mentioned as often as I can when I took her MFA workshop at North Carolina State University, she would bring in blackberry cobbler that I still think about almost every day. Such a wonderful person. Well, thank you, Georgianne, for contributing to this magnificent anthology and for all of the other wonderful work you do. Listeners, I've been speaking with Georgianne Eubanks, author of Songkeepers, a Music Maker Foundation anthology, which is co-published by our friends at No Depression and the Music Maker Foundation. Georgianne, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Jason. Good luck to you in your new job. I know you're going to be great. And I'll see you around the office.
Once again, I would like to thank Georgia and Eubanks for joining me. Copies of Songkeepers can be ordered from Page 158 Books. Go ahead and go over to page158books.com and give this wonderful anthology an order. I would also like to thank Libro FM Audiobooks for their sponsorship. Please navigate over to Libro.fm and enter the promo code BOOKIN, that's BOOKIN, to get one free audiobook and support your favorite local independent bookstore in the process. My name is Jason Jefferies, and this has been